The Apostles and Their Wives. There are various stories recounting that Joseph told men to give their wives to him. Alternately, there are instances where a woman who was married to another man then entered into a covenant relationship with Joseph Smith. For the moment, we will deal with events that appear to have occurred prior to January 1843. In my prior post, The Angel, the Sword, and the Heron Seduction, I discussed Joseph covenanting with three women who were married to other men. These ladies were Zinah Diantha Huntington Jacobs, Presendio Huntington Buell, and Mary Elizabeth Rawlings Leitner. DNA analysis of descendants shows none of the children these women birthed is actually related to Joseph Smith. Therefore, it is reasonable to speculate that these marriages were ceremonial in nature. Joseph's marriage to the Huntington sisters appears to have been partially based on the command from the angel with the sword, and partly inspired by Dimmock Huntington's desire to link the Huntington family to Joseph Smith in eternity. Mary Elizabeth Rawlins's marriage to Joseph was based on the command from the angel with the sword, and the urgency caused by Joseph's early fears about the seductions taking place in Nauvoo. In 1842, Joseph marries four additional women who are already married: Sylvia Sessions Lyon, Patty Bartlett Sessions, Elizabeth Davis Goldsmith Brackenbury Durfee, and Sarah Marietta Kingsley Howe Cleveland. As discussed in Wives of Sorrow, it appears these women acted as detectives during the hunt for the men seducing women in Nauvoo. These marriages, then, were a combination of Joseph teaching the correct doctrine and swearing these women to secrecy in pursuit of the men and women teaching or believing false doctrine about the nature of marriage and sexuality. By summer 1842, Bennett had been exposed as ringleader of the sexual predators. Bennett counterattacked Joseph in the press, claiming Joseph was the one who had been propositioning women. As with all the most effective lies, there was a kernel of truth. Joseph had been talking with women about the new and everlasting covenant. However, Joseph's aim does not appear to have been the easy sex Bennett and his ring of strikers had elicited from the hapless women of Nauvoo. This easy sex was the kind of sexual misconduct Bennett was accusing Joseph of seeking. Bennett supported his assertion by telling a story alleging Joseph had made improper advances to Sarah Pratt, wife of his apostle Orson Pratt. Bennett's tale about Sarah Pratt would prove a double-edged sword for the apostles in Joseph's church, as well as their wives. Judges in Israel. Joseph's response to the accusation regarding Sarah Pratt was outrage. Sarah was an acknowledged adulteress in the eyes of the dozens of members of the Nauvoo Masonic Lodge who heard John C. Bennett's confession in July 1841. Joseph initially counter-accused Bennett of committing adultery, only specifying to the general public that the woman was Sarah when Bennett persisted in printing his allegations. Unfortunately, Sarah's husband appears not to have been aware of his wife's infidelity prior to Bennett's accusations in Joseph's defense. After Sarah's infidelity was declared to the public, Orson chose to remain silent rather than publicly confirm he believed himself cuckolded. However, the other 11 apostles felt that Orson's silence was tantamount to an attack on Joseph Smith. Joseph's very life was at stake, they believed. Certainly, Joseph had been forced into hiding as a result of Bennett's accusations. The apostles didn't have Joseph to guide them as they deliberated with Orson. After a few short weeks, they decided the only way to deal with Orson was to punish him. So the apostles excommunicated Orson on August 20, 1842. Trying the judges. There is reason to think that Joseph was very distressed by the apostles' decision to excommunicate Orson. Not only had Orson been harmed, the 11 who acted had demonstrated a stunning lack of compassion. Joseph could have simply ordered them to readmit Orson to their number. But Joseph's goal was not mere restitution, but to create a quorum that was truly united, and one by choice rather than by edict. It is reputed that Joseph asked all the apostles to give him their wives. The timing of this request is not known exactly, and as far as I am aware, no one has ever previously documented a hypothesis that Orson's excommunication was the cause. Most have merely seen this episode as a trial of the apostles' faith, without providing a cause that might precipitate such a trial. An example of this lore is the 1854 sermon of Jedediah M. Grant, asserting, quote, "Did the prophet Joseph want every man's wife he asked for? He did not. The grand object in view was to try the people of God, to see what was in them." Close quote. Jedediah was second counselor to Brigham Young, and had been sealed to Young as an adopted son. The members of the Quorum of the Twelve Apostles that remained in the summer of 1842 had already withstood the tempest of apostasy in Kirtland and Missouri. A list of all the men who had become apostles in the short history of the church leading up to 1842 shows how many had fallen by the wayside. The surviving faithful members of the original quorum are highlighted. Thomas B. Marsh apostatized. David W. Patton was killed in Missouri. Brigham Young remained. Heber C. Kimball remained. Orson Hyde remained. William E. McClellan had apostatized. Parley P. Pratt remained. Luke S. Johnson had apostatized. William B. Smith remained. Orson Pratt remained. John F. Boynton had apostatized. Lyman E. Johnston had apostatized. To replace those who were no longer part of the quorum, Joseph had called John E. Page, John Taylor, Wilford Woodruff, George A. Smith, Willard Richards, and Lyman White. Despite the assertion that many of the 1842 apostles, if not all, were challenged to give Joseph their wives, we only have information on this challenge for a few of these men. Brigham Young, president of the quorum. There is no colorful story regarding Joseph's challenge to Brigham Young. However, the view Jedediah Grant expressed, that Joseph's request for some men's wives was simply a test, clearly came from Brigham Young. Brigham's first wife had died in 1832. Earlier in 1842, Brigham had participated in sealing Joseph to some of his plural wives, and Brigham Young had married the abandoned Lucy Decker. Brigham had shown time and again that he was willing to do whatever Joseph asked of him. Assuming Joseph asked Brigham for his wife, I suspect that Brigham may have agreed all too quickly, not internalizing the pain Orson would have been feeling as a result of his ordeal. Brigham would require tremendous sacrifices on the part of church members after Joseph's death. The polygamy-related sacrifices Brigham demanded of Orson Pratt would ultimately sour Sarah Pratt against her husband. Brigham Young's trust in Orson was never fully restored. Late in life, Brigham would announce that seniority in the Quorum of the Twelve Apostles should be based on the most recent accession to the Quorum, rather than the original date for ordination as an apostle. Orson Pratt had been the senior apostle based on the former accounting, and would have become president of the church upon Brigham's death. However, with a redefinition of seniority, Orson's rank in the quorum fell below that of John Taylor and Wilford Woodruff. Orson Hyde. At the time Orson Pratt was excommunicated, Orson Hyde was still on his mission to Palestine. Orson Hyde's bride was Nancy Marinda Johnson Hyde, a woman who had been a teenager in the home where Joseph lived in 1832. It appears possible that Joseph had been prompted to take Nancy as a plural wife in those early days. However, a mob attack intervened. During the investigation, Joseph apparently reached out to Nancy Marinda Johnson for help. Nancy Marinda was the one who reached out to Nancy Rigdon during the investigation. Shortly after Orson Hyde returned home in December 1842, Joseph broached the subject of plural marriage with him. Orson Hyde would marry two women as plural wives in March of 1843. In May 1843, Nancy Marinda Johnson Hyde was sealed to Joseph Smith. She continued to live with Orson Hyde and proceeded to have the rest of her 10 children with him. It appears Marinda, like Zinah Huntington and Mary Elizabeth Rollins, came to believe that she was one who had been foreordained for Joseph. However, Nancy lived the rest of her mortal existence with the man she had chosen to marry when Joseph hesitated. Parley P. Pratt. The configuration of Parley's family was uniquely complicated in 1842. Parley's first wife, Thankful Halsey, died due to complications of childbirth in March 1837. Parley then proceeded to marry Mary Ann Frost Stearns, a young widow who had been unusually devoted to her first husband. We don't have a record regarding Joseph's possible demand for Parley's wife in 1842. However, when Parley learned of plural marriage, he was overjoyed with the possibility of binding his loved ones to him for eternity. The challenge Parley and Mary Ann suffered regarding plural marriage occurred later, in 1843. Parley wished to have himself sealed to Mary Ann, ignoring the fact that she had a previous husband to whom she'd been quite devoted. Hiram Smith, himself new to the concept of plural marriage, agreed to perform the ceremony. When Joseph learned that Mary Ann had been sealed to Parley rather than to the deceased Stearns, he cancelled the sealing his brother had performed, which had been done without specific authorization. Joseph then proceeded to seal Mary Ann to himself. Mary Ann did not understand, and Joseph didn't record his reasoning. However, I propose that Joseph sealed himself to Mary Ann to make sure Parley and Mary Ann didn't again attempt to usurp the eventual place of the deceased Stearns at Mary Ann's side. John Taylor. In the case of John Taylor, we have snippets and a rich oral history that was then published by John's grandson, Samuel W. Taylor. And then you have me, also a descendant, and also at heart a novelist. So please forgive Sam and me for embellishing this story. John Taylor adored his wife Lenora. She was a full 12 years his senior. So John had married Lenora despite the traditional folk ways that would have had him seek a girl closer to his own age. When Joseph asked John to yield up Lenora, John was tormented. He did not eat or sleep. But at last he determined to discuss the matter with Lenora. Sam Taylor recounts that Lenora wanted nothing to do with the matter. She proceeded to lob kitchen items at John in her anger. At one point in the altercation, she reared back her arm and accidentally broke the glass window. The glass cut her badly, and Lenora would later claim she lost a finger as a result of the wound. More painfully, Lenora came to believe that her youngest child, Lenora Agnes, had died because of the events of that day. We don't know enough of the dating of events and the details of Agnes's death to understand why Lenora felt that way. Wilford Woodruff related that, quote, "The prophet went to the home of President Taylor and said to him, 'Brother John, I want Lenora.' It is said that John Taylor never answered the prophet, turned away and walked the floor all night, but the next morning went to the home of the prophet and said to him, 'Brother Joseph, if God wants Lenora, he can have her.' That was all the prophet was after, and he said to him, 'Brother Taylor, I don't want your wife. I just wanted to know where you stood.'" Close quote. When John Taylor effectively told Joseph, "If you want Lenora, you can have her," I imagine John Taylor was sporting a few cuts, and maybe a goose egg on his head from the pots and pans Lenora had just thrown at him, not to mention the blood from Lenora's self-inflicted accidental wound. Joseph did not require Lenora at John's hand. However, the circumstances hardly made Joseph's refusal to take Lenora seem like anything but self-preservation. Heber C. Kimball. In the case of Heber C. Kimball, the tale as we have it comes from his son-in-law, Apostle Orson F. Whitney. So this story isn't a romping human tale as we novelists have recorded for John and Lenora. It is a faithful tale from a devoted son. As John adored Lenora, so Heber adored his wife, Violet Murray Kimball. When Joseph demanded Heber yield up Violet, Heber went 3 days without eating or sleeping. Violet became quite concerned. Heber C. Kimball did not confide in Violet, but finally Heber decided he must do as Joseph had asked. He took Violet with him to visit Joseph. Then, to Violet's amazement, Heber put Violet's hand in Joseph's and gave her up. With Brigham, Joseph had likely faced a follower who obeyed without delay, an obedience too quick to change the heart. With Orson Hyde, the wife in question wished to claim an eternal blessing Joseph's hesitation had denied her. With Parley Pratt, Joseph was likely trying to prevent folks from usurping a dead husband's place. With John Taylor, the wife in question had a mind of her own and clearly demanded the right to remain with the husband of her choice. only with Heber and Violet were husband and wife so devoted to one another, and to the Lord, that Joseph's challenge was truly heart-wrenching, and the decision to obey so pure. In the face of the faith of Heber and Violet, Joseph broke down and cried. Placing Violet's hand back into the hand of Heber, Joseph then performed the ordinance sealing Heber to Violet for all eternity. Thus Heber and Violet would join Bishop and Elizabeth Whitney as couples whose civil marriages were solemnized for eternity before Joseph himself had obtained this privilege. No one would record the date of Heber and Violet's sealing. At the time, the ordinance was so sacred that few recorded such things. A complicating factor, perhaps, was the arrangement Heber made sometime in 1842 to take the widow Serapique Noon under his protection. If Heber and Violet were to record a sealing date after Serapique Noon entered their family, it would beg the question of why Heber and Violet's sacrifice in giving Serapique Noon a home had not been sufficient to warrant the sealing ordinance. I think this is another instance of allowing the need for secrecy to trump the desire to document dates. When Heber's son-in-law Orson F. Whitney wrote his 1888 biography of Heber C. Kimball, he was faced with determining how to assemble the facts of his famous relative's life. To Orson Whitney, Joseph's request for Violet was clearly the largest challenge, and it seemed to Whitney that this challenge must have been the first of his father-in-law's sacrifices on behalf of restoring the principle of plural marriage. However, Whitney's reconstruction of events does not fit the larger context, as it would place Joseph's demand for Violet's hand sometime in early 1842, rather than after Orson Pratt's excommunication in August 1842. Thus, Whitney's account of Heber Kimball's experience with plural marriage has likely prevented a holistic understanding of Nauvoo events. Orson Pratt reborn. By January 1843, Joseph appears to have won over his apostles. Orson Pratt and Sarah Pratt were rebaptized on January 20, 1843. Orson was immediately readmitted to the Quorum of the 12 Apostles. In 1852, when Brigham Young decided to announce Mormons were practicing polygamy, Brigham selected Orson Pratt to deliver the message. Orson, the man who had endured so much and so publicly, was by far the best man for the job. Had Orson been allowed to ascend to the position of church president, I believe he could have ended the practice of polygamy with authority. However, Brigham's redefinition of apostolic seniority prevented Orson from becoming church president. Orson would die in 1881, 4 years after Brigham Young's death. The end of polyandry. With this saga regarding the wives of the apostles, we come to an end of the cases where Joseph Smith marries the wife of another man. There are two minor exceptions that bear mention. Ruth Vos Sayers would eventually learn of the doctrine that allowed marriage to endure into eternity. Ruth craved the blessing of eternal marriage, but her husband did not believe. Mr. Sayers suggested Ruth become Joseph's wife in eternity. Thus we see Joseph extend an eternal sealing to a woman who believed, when her husband was both aware of the eternal arrangement and happy to allow his wife to participate in a ceremony Mr. Sayers felt was so much stuff and nonsense. Elvira Annie Coles would be sealed to Joseph Smith on June 1, 1843. Joseph Smith himself had performed the December 1, 1842 civil ceremony linking Elvira to Jonathan Harriman Holmes, widower of the martyred Marietta Carter Holmes. Elvira and Jonathan would tell their children that Elvira had been Joseph's wife, and that Joseph had requested that Jonathan take care of Elvira in the event of Joseph's death. Thus, though Elvira appears to be participating in polyandry based on the available marriage documents and affidavits, there is every reason to believe that Elvira's intention to be sealed to Joseph predated her public marriage to Jonathan Holmes. As already mentioned, there is no indication Elvira had sex with either Joseph or with Jonathan during Joseph's lifetime, though it does appear Elvira implied things to her daughters to encourage them to accept the new and everlasting covenant. Intriguingly, in February 1843, Elvira and Jonathan would welcome Eliza Snow into their home. Eliza had served as secretary in the Relief Society, while Elvira served as treasurer. Eliza had become one of Joseph Smith's plural wives in June 1842. Elvira would become one of Joseph's plural wives in June 1843. I propose that the lives of these three, Jonathan Harriman Holmes, Elvira Annie Coles, and Eliza Roxy Snow, were far more entwined than prior scholars have perceived.